Welcome to the Conestoga Podcast. This is Program 21 for December 21st, 2006. Conestoga is Oklahoma's largest literary science fiction and fantasy convention. Conestoga 10 was held on July 28th through the 30th, 2006, here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We celebrated our 10th anniversary with Yard Dog Press and Misha Merlin Publishing. These podcasts are a continuation of that celebration. The written word has power, but still, it is only an approximation of the spoken word. Who better to discuss the power and nuance of language than author Suzette Hayden Elgin? She is well known for her gentle art of verbal self-defense. She has also written the Native Tongue Trilogy and the Ozark Trilogy, and is the author of the Science Fiction Poetry Handbook. And now for Elspeth Bloodgood's interview with Suzette.
Hi, this is Elspeth Bloodgood, and with me today is Suzette Hayden Elgin, who has graciously joined us at Conestoga and is now joining us for the Conestoga podcast. Welcome.
I'm awfully glad to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Well, we love to have you here every year at Conestoga because you just bring so much to us. You bring your art and you bring your stories and all of your knowledge and the workshop you do on Sunday mornings, and that's really something we look forward to every year. So thank you for coming back and helping us make this a very wonderful convention every year. We think of you as
pleasure.
Being a big part of it.
I have a wonderful time every year.
Well, that's good. I wanted to kind of ask you questions about your presence on the web, because you've just started that in the last couple of years.
Right.
And some of the things that you've found, you're on LiveJournal, and if you'll tell me a little bit about your LiveJournal and what it's called, and then kind of what you discuss online there.
Well, it doesn't have a name other than my screen name. I don't have some clever name for it. It's O-Z-A-R-Q-U-E.
Ozark.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I spent the first few months figuring out how to do it, so probably only a year and a half of it count. And you were a lot of help with that. It's not on a specific topic. I think it would be easier if it were. You know, if you just did a blog that was about antique buttons, it would simplify life enormously. I do all kinds of different topics, and that makes it more complicated. It's like having to get up every morning and write an essay, you know.
Well, I've noticed that you've done science fiction poetry.
Right.
You've done pieces of the gentle art of verbal self-defense, but that has not been as easy for
you. That has not gone
you.
Well, no.
And then you talk about the travel that you do and the conventions that you're going to go to. Tell me about what's worked and what hasn't and who your community is, because it really does appear there's a community there.
I don't really know who they are because, of course, for the most part, they have screen names. There are a few of them who are former customers or their newsletter subscribers or something of that kind. But for the most part, I know these people only through the personality that they express in written language, which is tricky, and in response to things that I have said, because, of course, they can't initiate a conversation. I have all the power there. I'm the one who gets to start it. The discussions on the gentle art of verbal self-defense have gone extremely badly. They seem to bring out the worst in everybody that has a potential for the worst. And I think the problem is that the gentle art of verbal self-defense involves spoken language, and we're working in written language. They can't hear me talk. I always have the feeling if I could say this instead of write this, it wouldn't go badly, because I never had a gentle art workshop or seminar go badly.
Just for folks who aren't familiar with the gentle art of verbal self-defense, could you kind of talk a little bit about what that is and some
well,
of the concepts you go through?
It's not 10 killer smart cracks, okay? Mm-hmm. It's a system that I consider to be a martial art, comparable to any of the physical martial arts, very formalized, based on linguistics, And it's supposed to tell you how to establish and maintain a language environment where hostile language is extremely rare. And when it does occur, you have a method for dealing with it efficiently and effectively without any loss of face on either side. That's my goal. And I think that when I'm there in person, I think I manage pretty well. I once was asked to host a forum on that topic for a big martial arts website, and I agreed to only 6 months, mm-hmm. and I was so glad because it went so badly. It just, I think there is a temptation maybe to demonstrate to me that it's not going to work. You know, to say provocative things and start fights and see if I'm going to be able to figure out some way to handle that and things. It's bound to be a temptation that maybe is part of it.
Maybe, yeah. But language on the web does seem to be a little different than
it's very different
than
yes.
language other places. And
yeah.
and I wondered how this experience, you know, what you've as a linguist you've learned about the difference between spoken and written language in kind of what seems to be an intimate setting, because you see the same people over and over again. You get to know them mm-hmm. by their phosphors, if not,
yeah.
If not in person. But you kind of have an intimacy because you're connecting almost daily with the same group yeah. or some part yeah. of that group.
It has taken me a long time to learn. I've had a very long learning curve for this thing. And there are because I'm a linguist, I know exactly how to post something that would immediately get me thousands of excited comments. You know, that's really easy. All I have to do is say the war in Iraq is not a just war, kaplunk, and there would be all this. Just
well,
say something inflammatory.
There
are a lot
that.
Of sites doing that. To me, it's a lot more interesting to see what I could post that isn't inflammatory, isn't polemic, and is going to get some kind of a response. And it's for a linguist, it's like having this gigantic language lab. You know, it's like being a chemist and being gifted with this enormous chemistry lab to play with. And I'm very careful not to go over any ethical lines. They have asked me in the past, are you experimenting with us? Are you doing experiments? Are we just a bunch of guinea pigs? Not at all. But nevertheless, every day the challenge is, what can I post that would actually interest people without setting off some kind of a riot? You know? And the most popular thing that I have done so far has been a kind of memoir episodes.
The stories things. That you've told about your younger life
yes.
and
yes.
when your children were small,
yes.
I know that those have gotten yeah. lots of very personal responses.
Yes.
What I
and that surprised me.
Personal responses.
I didn't expect people to find that all that interesting, but there was only so much of that I could do without violating the privacy of my family members. It was just a certain amount, and I got to the end of that. What amazes me is that whether we're doing, you know, telepathy, we do telepathy sometimes, discussing a science fiction novel, working on a poem as a group, we do that. I'll post a rough draft of a science fiction poem and then everybody works on it. Whatever the topic, sometimes I post on eldering because I think being an old person is something that doesn't get enough attention. And whatever it is, I am so amazed that what I get in response is well-crafted essays, 4 or 5 paragraphs long. And some days I may get 50 or 60 of them. And that just astonishes me.
Well, most people don't get, I mean, there are not a lot of blogs out there that have the kind of traffic that yours does. I don't know, you know, how many other peoples that you follow, but you have built your own community, and there are people who are interested in language
yeah.
and people who are interested in science fiction and people who are interested in your verbal self-defense and people who stumbled on it because
somebody recommended
something. Somebody recommended
the fact
it.
That they, you know, I have been a teacher at every level of the educational system, and I am here to tell you that getting students to write an essay is not an easy task. And there are people who are writing 3 or 4 essays a week for me and doing a very good job, articulate, coherent, well-written. I am just astonished by this, and it just absolutely fascinates me as a linguist that this is how it works. And sure, I get a lot of silly stuff too, but basically I'm getting good writing in response to the questions that I pose, and I think that's a real compliment. That they are that interested in what I've said just astonishes me.
Well, I was wondering, because you have developed a following and a lot of people come, has this resulted in any additional book sales? Are you seeing are you seeing that happen?
It has been wonderful. You know, I've reached an age where getting out on the road and doing seminar after seminar and calling it 1,000 bookstores and all, it is hard for me. I get tired faster than I used to. And I wanted a way to get in touch with my readers without having to do all of that. This has turned out to work very well. My royalties are up. My sales figures are up. I have sold 3 poems and a short story just from things that have been posted on the blog. It has worked far better than I could have imagined. I judge myself against Andrew Tobias. There is a link popularity checker utility online, and I go put in my name and his, and he doubles me all the time. But I'm very proud of being half of Andrew Tobias.
Well, he's very well known.
Yeah, and he was smart enough to pick a single subject, basically. Right. You know, he does financial blog.
Right.
And I figure as long as I can... If I see myself dropping below half of Andrew Tobias, I sit down and work very hard to try to think of something interesting to write about.
Well, one of the things I know is that you're very busy. You wear a lot of hats. There are many things that interest you. You spend time working on the things that are the most important to you, or at least that's what I've understood from what you've written. And I kind of want to understand a sense of how important is it to you to maintain this. Do you see this as a tool to keep your royalties up, or is this now a habit, or is it fun, or is it work, I guess is what I'm asking.
I'm an Ozark person, and I suppose if I have a goal in life, it's to be useful. And to me, this blog is a way for me to really be useful. I feel like what I'm doing is useful. And there are times when I get smacked down. You know, I discover, oh, this wasn't as useful as I thought. But most of the time, I feel as though it's a way to spread information about linguistics, which really matters to me because the general public tends to be sort of uninformed about linguistics, and to do something about the problem of verbal violence, which, you know, means an awful lot to me. And this gives me a forum for doing those two things in a lot of different ways. So far, I have not been able to figure out a way to do Gentle Art of Verbal Self-Defense in this written thing. But I can take up other aspects of verbal violence and get spirited discussions going, and that pleases me very much. And it lets me write about my books and about my short stories. And so it fills a lot of different slots. But I wouldn't say, you know, I went into it initially thinking maybe this is a marketing and promotion tool, because as a writer who has to make a living for a family, I have to find ways to keep my books in print and sell them. And the getting out on the road business, which I have done all my life, was getting harder and harder all the time. So my first purpose was to find a way to do marketing and promotion without having to do all that travel. And then, to my amazement, I discovered that there were all these other aspects to it. So I consider it a way of doing scientific research. I learn an enormous amount. I have a varied list with people who know so many things about so many subjects, so that it's informative and entertaining for me there. It does let me try all kinds of things linguistically and see what happens, which is extraordinary for me. And it's just, in so many ways, it broadens my life. Now, I have a budget of time. Mm-hmm. I do it from 7 to 9 every morning.
You only spend 2 hours?
I only spend 2 hours, and they complain about my only spending 2 hours.
Well, I mean, you write 500 or 1,000 words a day.
Plus comments.
Plus all the comments.
Plus answering comments. Plus trying to read a lot of their blog posts and post a comment there if I see something that I think I can do something about. Fortunately, I read very fast and I type very fast. But
you would have to.
I could easily spend the entire day doing this, you know, but I can't. I don't have a slot that large in my work schedule. There's just no way. So the 2 hours is my limit. So, you know, I'm not a fanatic. I might go 10 minutes over or 10 minutes under. But basically, 7 to 9 is what I do.
Oh, how fun. I thought you might be budgeting yourself, because you often tell folks, you know, I'm going to be busy this week. Mm-hmm. Posting will be light. And yeah. Even then, you over-deliver. You generally post things when you say you might not. Is that on purpose? Is that
No, that's not on purpose. What will happen is that I will have said I'm not going to post, and that's because I don't have a set of things ready to go to be worked on and polished and posted. But then I'll see something else on the net that makes me think of a quick post I could do, and then if that happens, I go ahead and do it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I really think people ought to come out and check out your blog and join in the fun there, because it's a lot of people who are very interesting, who are trying
and well-behaved.
And they're trying to improve their understanding of different things and stumbling along together.
They're very enthusiastic, and for the most, we have only had one flame war in the entire 2 years.
To show our appreciation for Suzette, I have asked Dana Patillo, Conestoga's resident poet, for a short interlude.
The long and true music of her name. Like a giant lying down, the long hill gives the river its shadow at sunset. I cast my low voice like that shadow over the long and true music of her name. Lush as blue velvet, delicate as a border of white lace, cold as a rime of frost on a late-blooming flower, exposed as flood-lit no-man's land, high voltage like an electrified perimeter fence. I sing-song to myself each vowel and consonant like a child learning the alphabet. I break open syllables like the rock to which the convict gave the full swing of his grace. The sledge takes back the crack. The shotgun takes back the shot. The whip erases the welt. The quarry gives back all the echoes. Dust tumbling on shocked air, blinking like little novas through the last slant of sunlight, does not lose its savor, does not cease to speak and spell on the convolute stone the ogham of her immemorial name.
We have only had one flame war in the entire 2 years. And that one was my inexperience. It happened very early, and I had a religious topic come up that provoked a lot of stuff, and I didn't handle it well. But I learned from that. And I don't think since then there hasn't been anything else of that kind. And I go look at other people's blogs, and I can't believe the level of hostility that I see.
Well, it seems like most places, many people feel free to scold other adults in ways they wouldn't do in person.
Yeah.
That sitting in front of someone to their face, they would just never use the words that will come out of their pens. And I must admit, I have found myself in that position as well.
I was shocked at first. Part of the problem, I'm 70, and I'm a Southerner, okay? And the way that some of these young people felt free to talk to me just astonished me. You know, I couldn't believe it. It sounds arrogant, but I would just never speak to a person of my, if I were 30 and they were 70, I just wouldn't feel free to communicate in that fashion. I have learned who it is that's likely to do that, and I have learned to expect it, and I have learned not to get involved, so to speak. That surprised me very much. On the other hand, I am really pleased that people who are, so, for the most part, so much younger than I am, are interested in communicating with somebody my age. I think that's amazing.
Well, I think that that's kind of an interesting point you bring up there, that they're interested. You had talked about talking about eldering on your blog, and I know that that's of interest to you, and grandmothering and grandparenting, and I know that that's brought a lot of people to tell a lot of different stories about their experiences with their grandparents. Has that ongoing conversation added to your base of knowledge, or is it given you?
Well, you know, when I was touring for the grandmothering book that I wrote, The Grandmother Principles, what I discovered everywhere I went was it made absolutely no difference what the topic was supposed to be. Everybody wanted to talk about their grandmother and their grandfather. Everybody had all these stories. So the fact that all the stories came up didn't surprise me. That I was sort of prepared for. What did surprise me was how many people said things like, I don't feel like I have any idea how to become an old person or any idea what it's going to be like. And so I like to read your posts because it makes me feel sort of like I'm preparing, you know. I thought, now that's useful. And I agree with them. I don't think, because we no longer have elders in our house the way we did when I was a child most of the time. They are in senior communities, and they're snowbirds, or they're in nursing homes or whatever. And I was pleased to learn that there were young people who were actually interested in the subject of what being an elder is like, and beyond the topic of how do I plan for my retirement financially, you know, which they get plenty of stuff
about. Lots of people talk about that. I was thinking about that the other day. I have an office mate who talks about, you know, when she's a grandmother, and she's in her mid-40s, and how she knew someone who did Camp Grandma every summer.
And what Camp a great idea.
Camp Grandma was all the cousins were brought in, you know, four or six cousins were brought in for a week or two at Grandma's house, and they just did stuff for a week or two because they didn't live in town. And then at the end of the week, Grandma brought in a cleaning crew to clean the house so that she didn't have to worry about it, and she had all the joy of planning this week with her grandkids to enjoy, and getting the cousins to know each other. And this had really deeply impacted my coworker, and she's planning to be the grandma that would have Camp Grandma. That's the kind of grandmother she wants to be. And I had never thought about it that way.
What we have that's really worrisome, though, is all the women now who, because of their career, are growing old without anybody. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be honorary grandmothers. There is no law that says that you've got to only have biological grandchildren. There are a lot of children who need somebody to grandmother them, you know, and then they would be there for them when they are older. So I encourage that. And I think that, well, I have an honorary grandchild of my own, or one of my 12 is an honorary rather than biological. And I think that it never occurs to a successful single woman moving ahead in her career, healthy, vibrant, and all of this, that suddenly she's going to be 70 and there won't be anybody. There won't be a spouse. There won't be children. There won't be, and maybe she will have outlived, you know, her relatives, and there won't be anybody, and there she'll be all of a sudden. What is she going to do? You have to plan ahead for that possibility. You may outlive everybody that's related to you, and nobody talks very much about that. So I try to deal with that, and I have been very pleased at the response. They are, these bloggers are interested. I'm so proud of them. I am really proud of all of them, even the ones that sass me. You know, I still find it inappropriate for them to sass me. I can't seem to get over that. But I am proud of every single one of them because they hang in there. You know, they keep coming back and saying something and trying to make their point, and I'm just so proud of them.
And trying to communicate, you know, trying to reach out.
Yes. Yeah. I have a number of bloggers who self-identify as autistic spectrum disorder people, for mm-hmm. example, and they have difficulties that the other bloggers don't have. They don't give up because they've discovered that if they say, I didn't understand that, I will explain again. And if they say, I still don't understand, I will explain. I will keep explaining to the best of my ability until they do understand. They have a very hard time understanding why body language and tone of voice and things like that should make any difference at all. And so we have a lot of discussions about that. I think that is useful.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing to me. Because when I was a kid, there wasn't even television. And now here's this thing all over the world. It's just amazing.
Well, I find it fascinating that you know, the transition that you were able to make with it and what you've been able to do with it, because I read a lot of your newsletters, and they were something I looked forward to every 3 months. I think you're still doing newsletters,
yeah. Yes, every 2 months.
Every 2 months.
Yeah.
But I've taken to looking at your blog because I get a little piece of all of that on a daily mm-hmm. basis rather than having to save it up sort of like Christmas. But has that changed? Is the readership different on the blog? Is the experience different there from the newsletters?
Of course, because with the newsletters, I have all the power. You know, I have this forum. Nobody can answer me back. Well, they could, and 2 months later, I might say something in response in another newsletter. But basically, they can't contribute. I don't have their input. Whereas on the blog, I have instant response to what I say. If they don't like it, they don't hesitate to say so. Then if they do like it, they don't hesitate to say so. And I learn constantly. Every day, I learn something during those 2 hours that I didn't know before about language. Now, for a linguist, this is just heaven.
Well, what kind of things do you learn?
Well, I learned that the word U-M, with the big arguments about how many dots should go after it, and whether it had a capital letter at the beginning, is one of the most important words on the internet.
Is it really?
And that there is a big set of dialects about and on some blogs, some Usenet, some listservs, and so on, nothing is more insulting than starting out your post with your point is very well taken, or whatever. That's an insult. And on others, it's a compliment. I had more posts, more comments, and more discussion on this word than anything else I've done from the very beginning.
Really?
Yes. And things like that happen.
Okay. So a word that's kind of utilitarian in speech to fill a pause when you don't know what you're going to say takes on a different meaning based on what the community standard is.
Yes, and of course different meanings in different communities, and it doesn't have any intonation with it, so it's just sitting there. And I discovered that there were a lot of other people who weren't aware of all this either. They were as surprised as I was about so
well, are there like that. Any words that I travel a little bit in the liberal blogosphere, and there's a lot of common words that are sort of terms of art on different blogs. Mm-hmm. Have there been any coinages?
Fortunately, I am so ignorant of these young people. I have children in roughly that age range, but they don't say snarky to me or shiny. You know, And so I am constantly having to say, wait a minute, I don't know what this word means. And then everyone tells me at great length what the word means. So I've learned a lot of new words from the beginning of this. And we have had a lot of discussions about words we don't have in English and trying to find words for them and coin words that will be useful. And there has just been a great deal of discussion about language. I really think I have been able to work a lot of linguistics into it.
I think that's wonderful. I wanted to ask you about some of your, since I'm so fascinated with this, I could just eat up all your time talking about it, but I did want to ask you about the other projects you're working on in the other 22 hours of your day, because I know you keep yourself very busy. And what are you working on?
Well, a great deal of my time goes to the fact that I have adult children and I have 12 grandchildren, and there's all these birthdays and graduations and anniversaries and weddings and all, you know, and like most women, I have to deal with all of that, you know, and Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter, and there's endless amounts of that stuff to be done. A great deal of what I call emotional work that falls to me, and that takes a lot of time. Then I do try to keep writing, both mostly at the moment I'm trying to write fiction. Mm-hmm. I'm working on particularly stories that have to do with a fictional United States Corps of linguists in the future that would be like the United States Corps of Engineers, except they do language things. And I've sold two stories from that series and am working on that. And I have an awful hard time with that because things keep happening in the real world faster than I can predict that they'll happen in the future. And I'm having trouble actually keeping up with that.
Wow.
The government's really involved in this. They don't, by linguist, mean what I mean by linguist, of course, but they do keep doing things. And then I'm working on a book of poetry about that's sort of an autobiographical thing. Mm-hmm. And I do keep trying to work on that all the time. I'm very interested in promoting science fiction poetry. So a lot of my time goes into things like that. I wrote the science fiction poetry handbook. All the royalties for that go to the Science Fiction Poetry Association. And I try hard to work on that as a project. And then I have a website on religious language, the effects of religious language, and that takes a lot of my time. And then I have a verbal self-defense website, and that takes a lot of my time. And I publish three newsletters that come out every other month, and that takes a lot of my time. I'm just really very busy, and I try to go to at least two or three cons a year, and I have to prepare for those and for the art show. And, of course, I do art as well as writing. That takes a lot of my time. There aren't enough hours in my day.
No, it just seems like you just have so much to do and so many things that you're interested in.
But what's wonderful is that I love it. You know, any time I find myself really tired, you know, which sometimes happens, I say to myself, I could be on the checkout counter at Walmart, like a lot of elderly ladies. I could be on the gutting line at the turkey plant, like a lot of elderly ladies, and I immediately feel much better. I am so lucky to be able to do things I love, make money doing them, do them from my home, you know, mm-hmm. that is just miraculous. I just think it's wonderful.
Well, I do think you ought to tell us a little bit about your house, because your house is not a usual sort of house.
It's not. My house is underground. Although it's semi-underground. It's not completely, but only the front door, really. The front door and a window are exposed to the air. And we built it when they called in the crew to build it. The crew got 5 feet down digging and hit solid rock. And they told my husband, you'll have to pick another site. There's no way we can put this house here where you want it. And George said, oh, well. And he just put explosives on four, what he called four center squares or something like that, and blew a house-shaped hole into the solid rock and said, now just put it in there. And so they did. Everyone was very impressed. He had learned that in the military and knew how to do it. And we made a lot of mistakes with this house because we built a house for two people to grow old together, and never realizing that all our children would move back to Arkansas and have five children apiece, and that we were going to need a place for a rec room and a place for a guest wing, and you can't add on to an underground house. We also didn't realize we were going to have a warehouse in there and an art studio and a recording studio and an in-house press and all these other things. So my house, it has public rooms and then it has other rooms, you know. Mm-hmm. I tried to keep one room
for the guests.
That people can see without fainting dead away. And then there's the rest of the house because it's not nearly big enough. But it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I love living underground. It's very quiet, very private. Costs almost nothing to heat or cool. And I just am crazy about it.
Well, I think that's wonderful.
Great storm shelter.
Now, you mentioned that you have two stories that you've sold. Have they come out, or are they coming out? Or when and where should people look for them?
One of them came out in analog. I don't have the date and year on the tip of mm-hmm. my tongue. I apologize. Called Honor is Golden. And the other one came out at sci-fi.com. And it was called We Have Always Spoken Panglish. And I think if anybody... They couldn't find Honor is Golden because it's not on the internet. But if they want We Have Always Spoken Panglish, it's in the archives. And Panglish is P-A-N-G-L-I-S-H, obviously.
Well, they should go out and look for this.
They can Google for that if they want to and
That's
find it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Suzette, this has just been a lovely conversation, and thank you so much for allowing me to ask you all these questions.
Thank you for asking me questions that were so much fun to answer. I appreciate that.
Suzette Elgin Hayden, joining us today at the Conestoga Podcast. Good luck, Suzette.
For fans of Suzette Hayden Elgin's writings, I hope this podcast gave you a new perspective on her thoughts and her ideas. And for those new to her, I hope this podcast has opened the door to become familiar with her works. Please see our show notes for links to her website and live journal. We are grateful to have Suzette as a regular guest at Conestoga and honored to have her as a guest on the Conestoga podcast. My thanks to Elspeth Bloodgood, my co-host, for conducting this interview. We are almost at the halfway point before we start gearing up for Conestoga 11, which will be held July 20th through the 22nd, 2007. That doesn't mean we are at the halfway point for the podcast recorded at Conestoga 10. We've got plenty more on the way. However, we'll have new podcasts about what to expect at Conestoga 11 in the next few months. I'm Chris Murley, your podcast host and engineer. So until our next podcast, thanks for listening. For more information, our web address is www.sftulsa.org or send an email to conestoga@sftulsa.org. Questions about our podcast may be sent to podcast@sftulsa.org. Please send us an email or put a comment on the website and let us know what you thought of this podcast.